Next Chapter Podcasts. Hear Shakespeare like you've never heard before.
But thanks to all at once.
Who by next moon?
Thee we invite to see.
Who will be crowned at Scone?
Play On Podcasts are epic audio adventures reimagining timeless tales with award-winning actors. Listen today at playonpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Boil and bake.
Eye of newt and toe of frog, pull of bat and tongue of dog.
The 500. J.A.M. been walking us down through that 2012 edition, so it ain't nothing too new. Hundreds more to go and in need of a friend. The king of fleas for Angelo, talking the 500 until the end. Talking the 500 until the end. With my man J.A.M. on the 500, talking the 500 until the end.
God damn. Neil Young might be the godfather of grunge, hence why I'm wearing my flannel shirt, my Doc Martens. I put some Manic Panic hair paint in. I got my bomber jacket that I bought from Smash in Georgetown, which I used to skip school to go to so I could buy Clockwork Orange t-shirts because I was the hippest fucking 16-year-old kid at Seneca Valley High School. Oh, shit. Hey, hey, my. This is the second version of it, last song on the record. Of the record, Rust Never Sleeps by Neil Young and Crazy Horse, made in 1979. It's number 351 out of 500 on my show, The 500, with Josh Shademeyer. Scoogly boogly doo. There's somebody so mad right now that I just spoke in Oogle language. All right, so let me tell you about my week. I went to go see My Morning Jacket at Forest Hill Stadium in Queens. Thank you, Silvio, my agent from William Morris, from getting me dope-ass tickets. VIP, Brittany Howard Open. She did two songs off of Maggot Brain by Funkadelic and crushed it. And then My Morning Jacket came out and put on arguably one of the best shows I've seen since the pandemic. I saw Soulfly. I've seen Guns N' Roses. Both of them great. My Morning Jacket. I wish I could have gone to the second night because that's what I love about a band. I love about any band that will just play. They have such a catalog of music and they're like, we're doing multiple shows, we're not playing all the hits, we're gonna play two different sets each night. That was my problem with Beck, and I loved Beck, but the last like seven shows that I went to go see was the same show. My Morning Jacket, not so much, man. They played so many different hits. Ended with Megiddo, the only song, oh, man, fuck, I wanted Steam Engine. They didn't do it. They probably did it on Saturday. And I wanted Lay Low. That's the song that I cried to when I first was doing the record Z on the podcast. And on the way home from San Diego, Lay Low just hit me, those guitar solos. Oh, they played Dedante. Man, that was a great show. Go see live music, everybody. Go see live music. We're back, kinda, so just do it. And join the Patreon, because we need your support. $5 or more. Help us out. Some of you have been telling me what will get you to pay that $5. We're taking your requests. We're going to do more stuff. I don't know. Just help support the show, guys. It's expensive. I don't want to quit doing it. I want to keep doing it, but I need to pay these people. So patreon.com/the500podcast or join the YouTube, youtube.com/Josh Adam Myers. And follow me at Josh Adam Myers on all social media. And I'm at the Comedy Cellar almost every night, The Stand. I'll be at Moon Tower this upcoming 22nd through the 25th in Austin doing the goddamn Comedy Jam. Live 500 taping. And then I'll be Long Island. I'll be in Edmonton, Vancouver, Plano, Texas. I'll be in Cancun. I'll be in Houston for Skankfest. Lots of stuff coming up. Let's talk about Neil Young. Harvest Moon. That might be my favorite song by him. Love Harvest Moon. This is a dude, I knew he was important, but once again, didn't really listen to him until this podcast. So this is really my first real record
with him. Not going to lie, it's a good one.
My guest today, huge fan. Huge fan. This is the reason we train, man. This is the reason we do the podcast, to have a guest like this. The one and only Tom Papa. Tom, an incredible comedian. Incredible comedian. He has a show called What a Joke with Fortune Themester on Sirius XM. Breaking Bread, his podcast. He's got a Netflix special called You're Doing Great. But this guy is a legend in comedy. One of the funniest people working today. He's currently working on his third book. But today, we're talking about Neil Yizzle with Tom Pizzle. Rate, review, and most importantly, subscribe to The 500. Listen free on all platforms. If you're listening on Apple, leave us a 5-star rating and a review. It helps. Follow me at Josh Adam Myers on all social media. Email the podcast at 500podcast@gmail.com. Follow the Facebook group. And for all things 500, go to our website, the500podcast.com. All right. You want to do it, Neil?
Here we go with number 351, called Rust Never Sleeps by Me and Crazy Horse.
This is, here's the deal with me and Neil Young. Yeah. Is this is how much of a fan I am not of Neil Young, but that's not saying that I don't respect and enjoy his music. Mm-hmm. Is I thought the song Harvest Moon came out in like the early 70s. And then I found out recently it came out in the 90s. And that was really the first real love of Neil Young that I ever had, because mm-hmm. I was probably like a 2-year comic. I remember it's me, Gerard Carmichael, and my friend Angelo Bowers in these two girls' cars. We've been smoking a joint after doing the Unknown Theater. Did you ever do the Unknown Theater? It was on Santa Monica and Seward and Hollywood. No. Sarah Tiana and Laura Valdivia ran the show. It was a very, very important place for me in stand-up.
Yeah. I was probably in New York at the time.
Probably. Okay. But everybody, that's where I met Burr. That's where I met Gaffigan. Like so many people. That's where I started the goddamn comedy jam because I met the band there. And we're hanging out like 4 a.m, listening to the radio. We'd smoked a joint and Harvest Moon comes on the radio. And I'm like, this is one of the greatest, most beautiful songs I've ever heard in my life. And then nothing. But I don't listen to anything else of his, really.
But that's so strange, because I was actually thinking about that, because that fact always surprises me too, that like all those years later, that's when he pops that out. But it's so reminiscent of his early, early stuff too, that it seems like to love that and not love the stuff from his beginning solo, like there's so much connective tissue there that maybe you just didn't smoke the right weed and listen to those albums. Because there's like the coolest thing about him as an artist is just how he's restless. Like he just keeps evolving, but there's always that kind of that common denominator of that soulful, folksy, kind of angry, like meter to everything that he did. Maybe you were just listening to other kind of stuff when that was happening.
You could have been
a different guy.
Oh, 100%. I wasn't ready for it. But there was something about, like, Harvest Moon is one of my cry songs. It's like that, Vincent by Don McLean, Stardust Memories by Nat King Cole, and I'll even throw in the Willie Nelson version of it. That's my favorite song of all time, Stardust Memories.
Oh, Stardust Memories, yeah.
You know that one? It's like, sometimes I wonder how I'm the lonely night. Oh, my God. And also,
that's when Willie Nelson did all the standards, right? That the whole album was, yeah.
Yeah, and I actually just did his granddaughter's podcast the other day, and she was like, when did you become a fan? And I was like, well, I mean, I thought he was cool and half-baked, but I didn't become a fan until I heard him do the cover of that. And I'm like, oh,
this
guy is incredible. I mean, the fact that I know I have this story now, I made me go back. And this is the same thing with Neil Young, is that it's not like I'm not a fan of his. I find him to be this fascinating character. I've seen him pop up throughout, like, playing with Pearl Jam. And I remember when Crazy Horse came out, and I remember, you know, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. So I know why this dude is super important. And that's not saying that I'm not a fan, but this is, honest to God, the first real record of his that I've ever listened to,
right,
all the way through from start to finish. But
wow,
for you, it's interesting.
There's definitely those things where you, which is such, so great about music also, is that you are a different guy at different times as you're growing up. You're a different kind. And so like, if you were like hardcore into like metal at the time that your friends were folksy and listening to, you're just a different guy and you're not going to intersect with it. But for me, for Neil Young,
yeah,
I was into Crosby, Stills and Nash and Young and all that kind of stuff was like kind of like whispering around me. But when I was an athlete during school, and I wasn't like a super jock. Like, I was an athlete. I loved football and I loved all that stuff, but I was,
by the way, are you not an athlete now at all? Like, you're very specific. You're like, school after that, it all left my body.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to give you the actual timeline on it, because when I played football and then senior year, I played some kindergarten till senior year. And when football was over, I rolled a joint, I got my guitar, and I was done with sports. And I started learning boom, 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 boom. And I played that a zillion times in my room, getting high for the first time. Nice. And that was, Neil Young was my co-pilot out of one era into another era in my life. And I, from that, so that was like, talking about growing up and those different things that hook you, that was a love affair. And I was just in with Neil Young and just learning that riff.
So back then, what was it though? Like, what, I mean, well, first of all, like, so this came out in, and Adam, correct me if I'm wrong, this came out in June of 1979. So I'm born 5 months after this, November. So I'm already, you know, by the time I have this, is now I'm 41. So to find that, it's like taking me 41 years post it coming out for me to finally dig into this. How old were you when this came out?
So in 79, I'm 10. I'm nine. So I was a kid. I catch up to this in 86.
Okay. Yeah. So in 86, you're getting out of high school. Like you said, you stopped playing sports, you're smoking grass. Like, what is it that draws you to Neil Young?
The words, like, I was always wordy, you know, I was also the class clown as I was an athlete. So I was always like into funny, you know, like, yeah. I loved, you know, all the great comedians. Like, I was digesting comedy my whole life. So it was the words and the soulfulness, and there was just an ease to it. This wasn't a guy that was fucking around. This was a guy that was writing amazing melodies and stuff, but the words and the stuff, there was a weight to it. You know, there was just, you know, old man, take a look at my life. I'm a lot like you were. Like, all that stuff was just hitting me. I don't, you know, why does a poet hit you? I don't know. I mean, but he tapped into something that I was identifying with 100%. He was just soulful, and he was saying things that were opening up. I mean, even the rest of this album is, you know, stuff about Native Americans, and it was just like, it was just opening up. It was just, but you know, that's an intellectual part of it. The other part was just, I fucking love the music, that boom, 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 boom. Yeah. And it's funny because when you think about this album, like, that's what the first thing that triggers in my mind is like, oh, this is when he's with Crazy Horse and he's getting harder. You know, he's leaving that acoustic thing. It's actually a very sweet album. The album is pretty, it's pretty melodic, and it's still reminiscent of that. It's not like, you know, some of the stuff when he would really tear it up electrically.
This is what's funny, is that I, from everything that I knew about Crazy Horse and what they did with Neil Young,
yeah,
I can only picture like Mirrorball, because I thought it was gonna be this grunge, you know, keep on rocking in the free world from start to finish. And that was my, that's my music. I love, that's where I grew up with grunge. I love it more than anything. I still dress like a roadie for Soundgarden and I'm fine with that. But then I put this on and it's so like the first half of this record, I mean, is like you said, it's beautiful. It's melodic. It's these acoustic ballads that are all recorded live. And the whole time I'm like, God, is this ever going to like pick up? And then side two kicks in and you're like, but there it is, man. Thank you. Oh my God. even him doing my hey, hey again. I mean, that is.
Yeah.
It's like, 'cause everybody's talking about how great the song is. And I listened to the first version. And I'm like, I mean, it's beautiful, but it's not until you get to the final song in the record that I'm like, oh, now I get it. Now I see why this was important. So when you start listening to this, I mean, does that kind of like, what were you also listening to around that time?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, I'm going to love answering because it's going to kind of figure that out, figure out like why, really, because like, why was I listening to that? Because I was listening to, so in 86, so I saw Van Halen in the 84 tour, right? Mm-hmm. That was like my first concert at the Madison Square Garden. REM, like early REM was starting. I was like listening to all of that stuff, like Document and,
those
kind of thing. And but I also had this, you know, my father's influence. I took his 8-track and put it into my bedroom and actually hooked an 8-track that was for a car to speakers in my bedroom. And I was listening to Joe Cocker and Jimi Hendrix and Boz Scaggs. I was listening to like, I had this kind of like, this kind of stuff. But I definitely had a folksy part, like that REM kind of thing is kind of folksy. And then, of course, Dylan. You know, that was the same age where I heard Dylan for the first time. So, you know what I mean? So it was like singer-songwriter-y, a little more folksy. I wasn't, I as much as I loved rock and that kind of stuff, I wasn't like completely balls out, needed like big stuff, you know, like.
Did you get into hair metal?
No.
Really? Nothing?
No.
No, like White Snake?
Like, I don't like know. White Snake or Poison.
Here I go again on my own.
Yeah, like I love that stuff, but only like in what was fed to me in the pop world. You know what I mean? Like only stuff that was fed to me. I wasn't like going and getting those albums. I wasn't, that wasn't really my thing.
Do you want to, this is how crazy life is. And I've talked about this before in the podcast and actually, she's helping me, not furnish, but you know, style my new apartment in New York. But my ex-girlfriend, who I was engaged to is now married to Tommy Lee from Motley Crue. And I was such a huge fan of Motley Crue when I was 11 years old or 11 or 12. I cried when they lost the American Music Award to Poison. And now she's now like, and it's crazy. It's just like,
that's
it's one of those
crazy.
It's one of those things where you're just like, if I never followed my dreams, never would have had that connection. And it's like, oh, thank God. If I never do anything in my career.
I know those moments are so great when you're just like, when you find yourself in these situations, I always say quietly to myself, thank you, comedy. Like whenever I'm like in this crazy hotel or like standing next to an idol of yours or like in a conversation with somebody, you're just like, oh man, thank you, comedy.
Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like the Lumineers, Ani DeFranco, Wolf Peck, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask?
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.
Have you ever, because you've actually done, I mean, you've worked with some of the greats, and it's probably from you know, what you've done in your career, have met some incredible people. Have you ever met Neil Young?
I never met Neil Young. No, I never met Neil Young. But I was actually literally this morning, I was asked on my radio show, what was one of the best concerts you've ever been to?
Yeah, what was that?
And the first one that popped into my head was Neil Young at the Beacon Theater. It was probably like 90. It was probably Harvest Moon. It was probably like 92, 91, something like that. And it was a snowy night at the Beacon Theater. He was solo. He had this big pipe organ on the stage. Yeah. And he would go from guitar to this giant pipe organ, just like hunched over him, just that voice. I think that was another part of why I liked him, because when I was learning guitar, you could sing that falsetto. Like anybody could be like, yeah, oh man, take a look at my life. I'm a lot like you were. Right? You know what I mean? Like, and just to see him like playing this, it was a snowy night when we went into the Beacon, and he plays this incredible show, and he's just in there mystical like stuff, and then we poured out into the Upper West Side, and it was a blizzard. It was just packed with snow, and we're high, and we just kind of like drift out into the thing. It was just one of the best concerts of my life.
So that's funny that you say that, because, all right, so I just moved to New York. I live in Gramercy.
Oh, nice.
Because I'm getting sued, I can't tell you exactly where. I'm not letting the old landlord find out. but on the other night during the Hurricane Ida, and this is also whatever, because you were saying about like music that you listen to, and so I'm listening to this record,
yeah,
and then this thrash metal band is playing at Gramercy called Soulfly. They're from a band called Sepultura. It's like Brazilian thrash metal that I listened to when I was basically the age that you found out about Neil Young,
right?
And much like that experience, you know, the concert ends, you know, it's just a bunch of sweaty, like Latinos with really long hair, just been in the mosh pit. I haven't, I'm 21 and I'm just on the cut. And then I leave, and it's like, we come out and I'm high, and it's just torrential downpour.
Wow. And
not the same, but yeah, kind of the same. There wasn't an organ, but there was like, you know,
a lot of
devil fingers. It was, but it's also what's
moving,
funny.
Big emotions. And then you pour out into this,
but also
weirdness of the city.
But also what was funny is just the, you know, that comparison, or not comparison, just you're it's like two extremes where you're listening to this thrash metal, and then immediately I can put this on. And it's like, and I think that's something that just happens over time, where it's like, I probably wasn't ready for singer-songwriter stuff when I was your age,
right,
that you found this record.
Right.
And then it's like my whole evolution, like it's almost like this record came into my life perfectly now, where I'm an adult. My musical landscape has broadened, and it's like, I can actually appreciate this. Cause if I just would have heard Neil Young when I was in high school, I'd have been like, this guy's voice is terrible. Like, it's not right. Like, I get it. Like, I get that he's important, and I get that he's saying stuff that's important. But it just never would have clicked until now, which
so
is
it must have been a little bit of a mind trip for you, when if you're so into grunge, when at that moment when all of the grunge heroes are bowing to Neil Young, right? Because there was that moment when all of a sudden it was like, no, he's the guy. He was the god, right? When Eddie Vedder and all these guys were just like, no, this is the reason we do all of this. You must have been like, huh? Did it make you think, oh, maybe I should give this guy another listen?
No, you know, yes and no. I think there was just a way that I kind of looked at it like, oh, cool, I'll get to that. I mean, I get it. And I just tucked it away.
Yeah.
And I did listen to the Pearl Jam stuff that he did. Because I remember them doing Rockin' in the Free World at, I think, like the MTV Music Awards or something, where they brought him out. And it's like I said, it's just sometimes like jazz. Like, I always look at jazz because jazz is my favorite music of all time. And my dad grew up with just playing it for me. And yet I just didn't, I remember when I was a kid, I was like, this is cool. And then I started getting into hair metal around 8. And then I was like, all right, you know what? Like, jazz is lame. And it wasn't until I had a moment around like 2021 where it somehow made its way back into my life on a road trip. And then from that point on, it was like, oh, I was ready for that, which still at 20, 21 years old is like super young to get into something like Miles Davis or to get into Oscar Peterson Trio. But singer-songwriter that stuff, that's very young. And it's like, you know, that, especially I'm going to raves and I'm like taking cat tranquilizer. And then it's like, you know, you're going to the after party. Like, you guys want to hear some Stan Getz? You
know? Right.
But it's, but it's the thing is that like it's singer-songwriter stuff. It wasn't until my, late 20s. But by that point, it was a lot of like British rock, a lot of like British acoustic rock, like Richard Ashcroft and Radiohead and Travis. I just kept putting Neil Young on the back burner until Harvest Moon. And when I had that moment with Harvest Moon, it just made me start like kind of finding out a little bit more, listening to a little bit more. But this is what's so great about it is everything that we just said about, you know, the side one and the side two. It's like you really can see just like how important he was to that grunge scene, because that's the whole second half of this record is literally Man in the Box. It's by Alice in Chains. It's Nirvana. It's Pearl Jam. It's I mean, it's every element. And so he is, in a sense, at the forefront of being the godfather of grunge.
And think about it. Like, he had already, I mean, he started very young and he was, he had already had all this success. I mean, he's definitely, whatever your opinion, he is a true artist. Like, this is a guy that is totally fine with taking everything that's ornate and in place for his career and just tossing the table up and trying something new, leaving band members, going for something else. He was always like dedicated to the music. It was such a, you know what I mean? Like, he was, so he had this career and it's all that kind of stuff. And then he gets to that age and in 79 and just decides like, I want to turn up the amps. I want to just blast the shit. I want people to feel this rock. I want people to feel this energy. I want to harness this thing and push that out. This is the guy that was like so sweet and, you know, playing Sugar Mountain. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and it's
at
that, like it's almost like he should have, don't you start off plugging in and just ripping the shit out of stuff and wanting the walls to crack and wanting old people to hear you. Like, he starts soft and then all of a sudden kicks into that.
So I think we're, this is what everything you just said about Neil Young, about like, he's, you know, it's like, he's not locked down to just doing like playing with one band. Like, he's kind of like the jazz musicians of the 50s and the 60s where Miles Davis is like, all right, I'm going to play with these guys now. Yeah. And now I'm going to go over here and play with them. And much like Miles Davis, you know, Miles started seeing the tide turning in music where he was like, okay, this non-electric stuff is passe. Everything is Sly and the Family Stone now. It's funk, it's Parliament. So let's plug in and let's make something like Bitches Brew, which, you know, is a masterpiece. You know, it took a few listens.
You can get your head around it.
You can get around it, but there's moments that are so beautiful. And then you're like, this is a fucking mess.
Right. But is it me or is it him?
but that's the thing, is that I think, you know, from what I read in here, let's read a little bit about the record, because Adam pulled up some good stuff. Hold on, where's the little dude? Or here it is. All right, so here's a little bio about the record. So this was released in June of 1979. This is mostly a live album with songs taken from different performances in 78, then overdubbed in the studio with audience noise removed as much as possible. The album is divided into an acoustic Neil solo side and an electric with Crazy Horse. After his final performance at the boarding house on May 28th, Young collaborated with the art punk band Devo on a cacophonous version of Hey Hey My My Into the Black at the Different Fur studio in San Francisco, and would later introduce the song to Crazy Horse.
Wow.
Devo, which we've had, what's his face? Gerald Casale on the podcast. Wow. So, and I had their drummer, Josh Fries, which is another band that like completely blew me away. Because like, that's like the funny thing is like even with Neil, like I always looked at him as the old man, take a look at my. But then you find out that he's got this whole other collection of great music. And much like Devo, I only saw them as Whip It. Uh-huh. And then you start listening to the rest of their shit, and this band fucking rules.
Right, exactly. So
during the different first studio session, Devo vocalist Mark Mothersbaugh added the lyrics, "Russ Never Sleeps," a slogan he remembered from his graphic arts career promoting the automobile rust-proofing product, Rust Oleum. Young adopted the line and used it in his Crazy Horse version of the song, as well as the title of his album. The electric style is described as abrasive and was influenced by the punk rock zeitgeist of the late 70s, and provided a stark contrast from Neil's previous release, Comes a Time. The album has also widely been considered a precursor of grunge music, like we said, and many grunge artists have said, yep, they've been inspired by Young's distortion guitars on the B-side of this record. So, yeah, right. So that makes a lot of sense.
It does make a lot of sense. And you're right, like, with the Neil Young, I mean, with the Miles Davis thing, it's, you got to think, like, all right, they're good, they're great, everybody calls them geniuses, right?
Yeah.
And so there's, like, this... It's almost pretty ballsy to be like, all right, all the young kids are going and doing this now. I'm going to do it too. And I'm going to try and do it better. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? That's pretty ballsy to be
he's a hip. I mean, for having such a weird hair, like the way his hair falls, he's a really hip guy.
Yeah.
He's a really, I feel like he's always been at the beginning of like, you know, male pattern baldness. It just hasn't gone away. It's just like, it's thinner. It's like, you want to give him some like horse shampoo and just like, just come on. Can we use like a, just something?
And he's super tall. So he's always hunched over. So the hair actually like, it's warlocky.
Very warlocky. Perfect. Warlock. But that's the thing is that like, he is this cool guy. I mean,
the documentary of Crosby, Stills and Nash when they're, cause they, you know, that was a very, you know, him and those band members, it was like, they were kind of at war. Like they put it together and they put all of them in and they got something, they've got lightning in a bottle. And Neil's just like, no, you know, I'm out. I'm going to go do my own thing. And him, you know, fighting with all of those guys, there was just like these big egos. And the reason I bring it up is because he says his dedication, he's like, he's kind of cantankerous in the documentary when they're asking him about it. Like, why did you screw with this? And he's like, it was just about the music. I'm sorry if feelings get hurt. And I'm sorry if people think like I'm an asshole sometimes, but it was all always was and always will be about the music. It's always about creating music, pushing music, doing. And it was, I don't care if a band member gets upset. I'm not even thinking about that. I'm thinking about the music. And that's why he went through all these iterations and played with all these different people.
Yeah.
And, you know, those guys, you know, they've said in a lot of interviews, he's an a-hole.
Have you ever met somebody in comedy that had that same perspective where they're just like, God, it's like, they're so great of a comic. It's just, they're just like, they don't care about the friendships. They don't care about anything. It's just the jokes.
I don't know. I find comedians to be a little more sensitive. Like they do care about what you think about them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, maybe Louis back in the day, he was the only guy that seemed to be kind of an asshole and didn't care about what your conversation was on the way to the stage. You know what I mean? Probably him more than anybody.
Yeah.
You know, he was there just, you know, I didn't like him because he was kind of an asshole, but you couldn't deny that he wasn't there to make small talk. He was there to go up on stage and do his thing.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. Well, so Neil Young, in a sense, is basically that. That's what he cares about. He wants to make the music. Mm-hmm. He wants to do something great, or at least something that's in his heart. And I feel like from this record, he basically got that. Because each song on this record is a complete and utter like outpouring of just emotions.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I experienced. I mean, so let's kind of go through this record a little bit. All right. What, first of all, Well, I'll get to it. I don't want to. This album has the greatest track title of all time. Can you guess what I'm thinking of?
Ride My Llama?
Yes. Yes. Oh my God. I love this song too.
And didn't he raise llamas like later in his life?
Adam, find out. If there's a video of him like
llamas, like, or ostriches, or I think it was llamas though.
I'm praying there's like a video of him like feeding like an alpaca or whatever those things are, that there's like llama-esque. Oh God. All right, but we gotta start with the title track. Not the title track, but the opening track, My Hey Hey, Out of the Blue. Young compared the rise of Johnny Rotten with that of the recently deceased King Elvis Presley in this track, who himself had once been disparaged as a dangerous influence only to later become an icon. Rotten returned the favor by playing one of Young's songs, Revolution Blues, from On the Beach on a London radio show, an early sign of Young's eventual embrace by a number of punk-influenced alternative musicians.
Wow, interesting.
Very interesting. It's interesting.
I didn't know the punk thing. I knew like the grunge part of it, but not that the. But well, I mean, yeah, that's such a great line.
But there's, I think the line that really, really sticks out to me, which is the one, which, you know, I was going to ask you, is this arguably one of the most important rock lyrics of all time? It's better to burn out than fade away.
I know. But that is a great line. I mean, come on. That is, I mean, because that's the weird thing about rock, though, right? I mean, it's that there were all those bands kind of lashing out of like, it's better to burn out than to fade away. And it's like, but these guys went on to have careers 40 years after that lyric was written.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, 100%. So does that lyric speak to you, or is there like another Neil Young lyric that sticks out to you even more?
That is one of the tops, I would say. I mean, Old Man, Take a Look at My Life, I'm a Lot Like You Were. That one, for me, a version of that line hits me in different ways as I continue to age.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like my relationship with my father, like there was times when you were like there was an anger towards it, then there was an embracing of it, and then you see all the different shades in that one line. That probably for me carries a little more weight.
I get that. But what about this lyric in particular though? Like, what do you think? Especially just from the meaning of it, do you think that it is better to burn out or to fade away?
Better to burn out than to fade away. It's hard to say. Like as when I look at musicians, there are very few that you want to see running around that can do it. Like you could see like a Keith Richards continues to go, and Bob Dylan continues to go, and like there are versions of it there, but then there's like that brand of like, you know, youthfulness that you don't want to see. Like when you see like on the DVD things on television, when you're on the road and you see like the specials for Foreigner, and like you see some of these guys that are still out there doing it, and you're like, it's kind of cringy. And you see like the 55-year-old women still pumping their fists in the audience. It's just like some of it doesn't work, some of it doesn't age, and it should fade. It should burn out. It should have burned out.
No, you go to see a band like Rolling Stones. I mean, they're still putting on a show. They're still killing it. Bruce Springsteen still killing it, doing a 3 or 4 hour show. Paul McCartney, he's in his late 70s, if not early 80s, and he's still killing it. Foreigner, on the other hand, my buddy works for Booz Allen Hamilton in Washington, D.C., and during their Christmas party, Foreigner played.
Right, right. You know? I know.
And they're great. They're a great band. But it's one of those things where, like, so I do that music comedy show, the Goddamn Comedy Jam, where it's like all the comics sing and it's great. And I'm 41 and I've said, I'm going to keep doing this show until I don't look cool doing it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think there's like, you know, I don't know when that's going to be, because my knee's already starting to hurt. And I mean, I've got so much CBD cream on my knee, and it's like, you know.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.
I don't, you know, in when you really look at that lyric, though, I mean, let's look at like a band like Nirvana, because I think that because one also, and this is, it's full circle. I didn't even think about that as I was saying this. This is actually pretty creepy. The lyric, it's better to burn out than fade away, was quoted in Kurt Cobain's suicide note.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Young later said that he was so shaken that he dedicated his 1994 album Sleeps with Angels to Cobain. So, all right. So that's perfect that I actually brought that up. Thank you.
Good one. I've got chills.
But this is the thing though, is like, what would have happened with Nirvana if he doesn't die in 1990, and quote me if I'm Adam, was it 93 or 94? Just because I know somebody's going to get pissed. 94. If he doesn't kill himself in 1994 and Nirvana continuously keeps making records, is Amy Winehouse, same thing. It's like, because they have these small catalogs of music.
Yeah.
That, even the Doors, you get four records, five records, and then that's it in that short window. Are they still the legends that we still look at, these icons? Is Kurt Cobain going to be, you know, are there kids that are 13, 14 years old that are wearing Nirvana shirts? Like, this is the band.
Right.
Are they still doing that?
Because they're frozen in time.
Yeah.
They're doing it, but it's different. I mean, Dave Grohl still rocks. He's still, you know, doing his thing, but I'm all for artists going and getting deeper and becoming something else, but that's a different conversation. That thing that you're talking about, like Kurt Cobain is distilled for us. He is set in amber as that rebellious, that thing that he captured we only get that from him. That is it. And that is pretty special. It's horrible, but horrible. It's pretty special that's all that we get. And because it just, it's so, the essence of all of that is just set in time, set in stone. So yes, he would have, I guarantee you, I would go see Kurt Cobain 20 years later at the Beacon on a snowy night with some weird instrument up on stage, and it would be meaningful and something special, but it would have evolved into something different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's
look at it in film, because this is the one that just keeps popping in my head. All right. Someone like James Dean, right? Mm-hmm. James Dean is just encapsulated, this good looking young dude, the coolest of the cool.
Yeah.
And then who is also like his like contemporary? Marlon Brando. And Marlon Brando should have died right around Last Tango in Paris, because he did The Island of Dr. Moreau. He was a fat blob. And I think he wasn't even in half the movie if you watch that Val Kilmer documentary.
Yeah.
And it's like, we look at Marlon Brando now. Dude, he's the greatest actor that has ever lived. He changed the face of acting, and yet all we think of him is that fat dude wearing a muumuu with the little tiny person, you know, and on this shit movie directed by John Frankenheimer, which is terrible.
I know. It's horrible. So, yeah, you're right. It's like this. It becomes this different story. I will say this, though.
What?
The one art form that can continue to where you want to see them get old, and I'm not just saying this for our benefit, is comedians.
True.
Comedians, because very few comedians are rock stars, sexy young vibrant rock stars. They're thinkers. They're communicating. Like,
Yakov Smirnoff was very sexy. He was
much
very, very sexy.
There are some exceptions. There are some exceptions. But you want to see, like, you want life experiences. You want people. I would much rather watch a comedian later on than when they're starting, even though they're funny people. And, you know, we all start out and it's like my apartment, my dick, and my girlfriend.
Did you just look at my set from last night at the Cellar? Because that's everything I just talked about.
Yeah. So, you know, like there's life experience for comedians, but that's a different thing. They're almost more like writers.
There's funny that you're saying that, and I'm not going to name who the comic is, but I'm friends with a very, very big comedian, and we were talking about stand-up, and they are talking about how they want to retire because they're feeling like their specials aren't getting better, they're getting worse. And he's like, I don't wanna, you know, I've done the hits, I've done all this great stuff, mm-hmm. I've toured the world, I've made a lot of money, but last thing I wanna do is put out a bunk special that, cause dude, you know comics, dude, we are, you know, like we said earlier, it's like even Louis cares about what his contemporaries think. He might not like, it might not influence like his life, you know, to the point where he's like, I have to change my whole set. But there's something about seeing a comic in the back, watching our set and just being like, okay, they stuck around to watch me. So we like that respect. So I know for a fact that he's, you know, probably heard and realizes that it's not as good as the first few specials. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, I feel like and he's young. He's a younger dude.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's rare that you get somebody like Carlin who's, you know, and listen, Carlin's later specials weren't as funny, but what he was saying was 100% spot on. It wasn't as nearly as funny as the other stuff, but someone like Lenny Bruce, who's one of my favorite comics, of just the mythos of him, just the mm-hmm. legend of Lenny Bruce. If Lenny Bruce survives the trial, survives heroin, never dies, is he still this like king of cool? And like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's the reason that Carlin is because he continued to write. He continued to mine that source. He can continue to use his craft to dig deeper. And whatever young comic is saying, I already did it. Well, be more patient. Go back and write. Mine it. You're a great comic mind. Obviously, you're able to connect with people.
Yeah.
Go deeper. Be patient. Don't release something for another 4 years, maybe.
Yeah.
Go back to be patient. Let it grow. Let it become, and then fucking come out with it. Don't feel like I've got to do it every hour and keep up and keep my tour going. It's all marketing grossness.
Yeah.
You are richer as an older person. Go deeper, mine it, and then put it out. And don't be a slave to what you think the public wants from you.
Yeah.
Stay true to the art form and go. I mean, if you can write and you can, if you're still constantly writing, you'll be relevant. It's the guys that stop and you see it. You see like the references are a little dated. They're not really exploring. You can see it. And it's because they're not creating, right?
I know, dude. I got 10 minutes on Reaganomics. It's like, I'm like, God, I gotta write more, man.
Yeah.
He's like, this Newt Gingrich guy. And they're like, what is it, Josh? What, you're only in your 40s, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. But I agree with you. I agree with you. And that's a great point because like there's someone like Burr. I feel like his specials are getting better, mm-hmm. you know, and it's and that's the thing. And just to add to that point, you know, dude, it rules getting older. Like
yeah.
it's especially as an artist, it's like we become more comfortable mm-hmm. in our skin. And you know, musicians and comedians have put out better stuff as they've gotten older. For example, and I did the album on my podcast, Peter Wolf. Is uh-huh. that yeah,
Jay Giles?
Jay Giles Band, he had that record. I did it with Burr right at the beginning of the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
And the Jay Giles Band stuff is great. But like, this is like a fully formed artist,
yeah.
you know, and fully yeah. formed guy in his 50s. I think maybe he was in mm-hmm. his 50s or like early 60s, putting out a record about getting older. And he talks about love in a right. way that you're like, oh, this is a person that's lived through it and experienced uh-huh. the end of a relationship that's been heartbreaking and how to come out of that. Because someone in their early 20s that's writing a song about love has no fucking idea what real love is. So some can mine it. Some can mine it and use it properly. But then on the other hand, some are just like, some bands are just still making the same record about Reaganomics.
And look, there's something, you know, like the Nirvana thing is a great example. And just some bands are, you love them for their youth. You love them for their anger, for their thing. Like the Stones, you know, they put out some good stuff like later on, but does anything touch like Gimme Shelter and those, like the raw energy of what they were doing? Yes, they evolved. And if you love them, you're going to go the whole distance with them.
Yeah.
But there is something to those, the raw energy of youth and anger that, you know, you just want that and you don't want them to die. We'd like to go and like look back and do all the rest of it. But there's, you know, like watching Dylan, I saw Dylan at Madison Square Garden in like 98.
So what is that? What album is that? Is that the fucking Time Out of Mind?
Maybe.
Yeah, we did that. I did that with, who do we do? Was that Rita Wilson? Check to see. I've had the weirdest people on this podcast, dude. I've had Rita Wilson, Tom Hanks's wife, Neil deGrasse Tyson. Like,
it's great. These are good people.
Good people.
But there was, I remember what we watched, and he had that great band with, what was it, John Sexton, and you know, that album was kind of like a rebirth. It was kind of like a new thing. And the album, it was great, but I was with a bunch of people that, you know, several people that were not really hardcore Dylan fans. And they came out like, yeah, it was good, but man, that voice, you know, that's always the thing. But he was evolving into this different character. But for me, like the artistry, like his craft work could not have been better. Like he was so good and he was evolving. And it was like guys like that, these quirky, you know, different like poets in a way. And Neil Young is the same thing. It's like they weren't the guy in tight pants selling sex. You know what I mean? Maybe that's what it is. It's like if you're selling sex and you're a sexy young person, to see that get older but if you show up and you're just kind of like a goofball and you're just like a different kind of a thing, that can get old because you want to see a gnome when he's old. You don't want to see a gnome. You weren't into the gnome because he was wearing sexy pants coming out of the mushroom.
Huge fan of gnomes. Huge fan.
Love gnomes.
So I found this quote. John Lennon commented on the message of the song in a 1980 interview with Dave Sheff from Playboy. And it's specific about it's better to burn out than fade away. And John Lennon is quoted saying, I hate it. It's better to fade away like an old soldier than to burn out. If he was talking about burning out like Sid Vicious, forget it. I don't appreciate the worship of dead Sid Vicious or of dead James Dean or dead John Wayne. It's the same thing. Making Sid Vicious a hero, Jim Morrison, it's garbage to me. I worship the people who survive. Gloria Swanson, Greta Garbo. They're saying John Wayne conquered cancer. He whipped it like a man. You know, I'm sorry that he died and all that. I'm sorry. Yeah, this is a real quote. Like they literally just, Adam, could you have cleaned this up a little bit to get me the meat and potatoes?
I like it. No, keep going. Right.
I'm sorry for his family, but he didn't whip cancer. It whipped him. I don't want Sean worshiping John Wayne or Johnny Rotten or Sid Vicious. What do they teach you? Nothing. Death. Mm. Sid Vicious died for what? So that we might rock. I mean, it's garbage, you know. If Neil Young admires that sentiment so much, why doesn't he do it? Because he sure as hell faded away and came back many times, like all of us. No, thank you. I'll take the living and the healthy.
All right. See, this is what's difficult is whoever says it last makes sense. I get what John Lennon is saying, and in all honesty, that's kind of how, as on a human level, that is what I believe, like the old, like fine wines, old artists getting older. I'm totally on board. But the kind of young burning out and rather than fading away, you know, that we have the Jimi Hendrix, Johnny Rotten, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison stories as part of our musical litany and the history. It's kind of cool. I mean, I don't want to say that death is cool and that these people suffered and all the people left behind didn't suffer. Of course they did. It's all horrible. And I like things to age, but that we have those kind of crazy, cool little chapters. Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of ballsy.
No, I completely agree with you. I mean, so trust me, I would love to have some of these people back. There's sure. certain artists that you're and friends or whatever that you're just like, you know, like I lost my best friend in 2012. And, you know, if he doesn't die, I don't apply what he taught me about life to my life. And so I've been able to find the good in that. And I think it's the same mm-hmm. thing with these artists passing away, where it's like, we get this small window with them. They make mm-hmm. their stamp on the world. They change, you know, like do Nirvana changed music. God. It changed teenagers. It changed everything. And I don't know if he still has that effect. I don't know if the world turns into the world that we know. Like also, I don't, did you see the Woodstock 99 documentary?
I hosted Woodstock 99.
Wait, hold on. Did fuck, I feel like I was just talking about this. Are your friends were like Rich Voss. Wasn't Rich Voss supposed to go with you or something?
He was there. He was on, Rich was working the small stage, not to shit on Rich, but he was actually having more fun, but he was on the small stage and I was on the main stage. And there's a great, I literally just saw these photos of it where Rich and I are like at his stage and we're both just like looking and there's like this sea of people behind us. Like, what the hell are we doing here? But they asked some comics to come and host and like bring people on and off. And yeah, I was there. And my friend who I who I brought along, who's just a big music fan.
Yeah.
Was like, dude, I was watching the documentary. Like, please don't show Tom. Please don't show Tom.
This is you covered in mud, like, grabbing a titty. You're like, Tom was adding to it? Oh my God. Hilarious, dude. Yeah. That's great. Oh my God.
It was intense. It was so great.
I mean, were you scared for your life?
I actually, at the end, at the end when it was burning down. And who's the Wheeze? That DJ from Buffalo area, like he's a legendary DJ. The Wheeze, I think his name is.
I gotta find him because I gotta see what this guy looks like, and I have to hear his morning radio
voice. He looks like
voice.
John Fox. Like,
he's like, he sounds like me. He's like, we're the Wheeze. We're giving away Woodstock 99 tickets. You can be backstage with Wes Borland from Limp Bizkit if you're the fifth caller.
100%. You just nailed it.
Thank you.
Well, that guy and his wife threw me in the back of their car. Because they knew the area and they got me out of there at the end when it was starting to burn down.
Not without my daughter knew. They fucking went in there and fucking threw you in,
come
covered
on,
you.
Papa, get in the car. We'll get you out of here.
We gotta go. Come on, man. Save Tom Papa. Save Tom Papa. Get away from me, you shit covered fan.
The shit is on fire.
And it was like, there's so much to it, but the beginning was so great. Like when James, I'm just standing there on the side of the stage. The whole thing's about to kick off. 100,000 people in the audience, and James Brown is standing next to me in his jumpsuit. He's like, the short little powerful alien, and they're like, somebody's got to go out and say something. So I just walk up to the mic. I'm like, are you guys ready? I don't want to say, you look beautiful. Water bottles, boots, shipping coming thrown at me, and then James Brown goes on and just
annihilates. That's so great.
Oh my God, just kicked it off.
So I found this. Young replied 2 years later to what Lennon said. He said, the rock and roll spirit is not survival. Of course, the people who play rock and roll should survive, but the essence of the rock and roll spirit to me is that it's better to burn out really bright than to sort of decay off into infinity. Even though if you look at it in a mature way, you'll think, well, yes, you should decay off into infinity and keep going along. Mm-hmm. Rock and roll doesn't look that far ahead. Rock and roll is right now. What's happening right this second? Is it bright or is it dim? Because it's waiting for tomorrow. And that's what people want to know. And that's why I say that.
How about that?
That's, how about that, dude?
I would love for that conversation between Lennon and Neil Young to have gone on for 5 days. Forget Woodstock. I would have just sat and watched those two talk, right? Oh my God.
Yeah. And just Yoko in the corner, just
And everybody, and every guy, every time someone opens their mouth, they win the debate and then until the next one speaks.
Yeah.
They're just nailing it the whole way.
Both of them are right. Both of these guys are right. There's so many people that would want some of these people that have just burnout. They would want them back, but you know, this is what we have to accept. What we have, and what we have is some people only have a short window, but their stamp is there, and it's super cool. And that's what's cool about life, is that we can keep questioning it and being like, God, what would have happened though? Mm-hmm. Like what would have happened if Michael Jordan got drafted by the Portland Trailblazers instead of Sam Bowie? Like, right. would it still have been great? We never know. And that's what's great about life.
Yeah. And there's, you know, they're speaking to a part of our psyche, like those people that did burn out talks to that reckless part of you, that part that that self-sabotaging part of you, that what if I were to just take drugs and alcohol and just say, fuck it and just go. What you're right. We all have that little thing in us. What if I went that way?
Can I tell you? It's awesome. I've done it, and it's fucking great, dude. Me and the Wheeze. We should call the. Can we get the Wheeze on the phone? Is he still alive, the Wheeze?
I think the Wheeze is. I don't know if he's still on the air. I probably not. That was a long time ago.
Wait, what do you got here? What are you sharing? This is the Wheeze.
That's the Wheeze. Yep, that's the Wheeze.
It's kind of how I envision him. I mean,
and this seems like it's kind of recent, like. He looks older now for sure. So this is definitely since then. When I knew the Wheeze, when I was with the Wheeze, he was probably 40 pounds, 50 pounds heavier. I mean, he was like a big chubby dude with a Hawaiian shirt, just like, it's the Wheeze, you know, your whole impression. And then when shit went down, the coolest part of that was, well, there was a lot of cool parts, but I stood on stage when Kid Rock came out. That's when Kid Rock really cemented like his spot. And everyone was anticipating it. Like backstage, he was just driving around on this little scooter, like with his knees up over, like he was this tiny little scooter. And he had that little person that was always on stage with him. And everyone was just waiting. It was just all happening. Like he was just rising. And then he came out on stage and the place went insane.
Yeah.
And I got to stand on stage in the back, watching the, like feeling it. That was the coolest. That was the thing. The most profound thing was feeling the energy of 100,000 people, just literally feeling it. And then knowing the power that musicians had to play with that energy, to control that, like to actually harness it. It was like, I was up there like, and our next band is Work Boots. Hitting you in the head and run off. The closest thing I got, I played Marco Polo with the audience. For, like, we needed to fill time, and I was like, Marco, and they all just started Polo, and we just started going back and forth, and that was the only like semblance of like playing with it. I was like, oh, I see why rock stars are drug addicts, because they don't make a drug that's as powerful as what that feels like.
That was your like Freddie Mercury at Live Aid, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yours is just Marco.
Marco.
Polo. All right.
Marco Polo. I came up. I was buzzing.
Like, who's got cocaine? Because now I think it's the only thing that's going to keep this going.
Yeah.
Kid Rock, that was his moment. He had that moment capitalized on it. And I think, like, when you think about everything that happened at Woodstock 99 with all the bad shit, if you say, well, what was one of the positives? You're like, fucking him coming out in that fur with the red hat, taking it off, looking over the audience, and then hitting that My Name is Kid and the things going off.
Ugh.
I still watch that and I still get chills. And Brad Williams, the little person comic, has sang that song like 4 times at the goddamn Comedy Jam the same way. Wow. Comes out with the fur, which is great that he's got a tiny fur, and he annihilates it. And it's like, if somebody ever drops out of a show, he's the first person I call. It's like, you gotta do the Kid Rock thing.
That's so great.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.
The other really cool moment for me was the one night ended with Metallica.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like everyone's hanging out on the stage, you know, everyone's like hanging around and the bands are coming in. When Metallica came in, it was like, if you're not with Metallica, get the fuck out of here. And nice. They just cleared 100 yards from the stage. It was just Metallica people. And they went up and just in their powerful Metallica darkness, just and they ended the night. And then the next morning, the first act is Willie Nelson and family. And he comes out there with his little guitar. And he's like, good morning, everybody. And just the softness of just waking everybody up with his music was just like, this is just as baller as what Metallica did that night.
Sure.
In this totally different way. I mean, so impressive.
I mean, Adam, you might want to check this for me, but isn't that kind of what they did with Jimi Hendrix doing the Star Spangled Banner? It's like, wasn't he the right. first thing probably that morning? Because that just makes perfect sense. Yeah. So check on that.
Yeah,
that,
good morning.
Yeah, it's just, it's like you're waking everybody up. You know, you know, back then, everybody's probably on, what are the drugs back then? You know,
LSD. LSD,
mushrooms. Yeah, a lot of weed.
All maybe light stuff.
All the light, yeah, real,
real friendly, huggy stuff.
I'm glad I didn't go. I watched it on, pay per view at my friend's house, and uh-huh. I mean, it's just after you watch that documentary, you're like, man, it is what a shit they, show. Like going really the way you went, going the way you went is great.
I had a hotel. I would go do the thing, and they would take me off, and I would go to a hotel and sleep at night with my friend, and it was just like. And then you come back and like, we had no idea. We just like thought it was all great. We had no idea. These kids were starving and had no water. It was just awful.
So what? So he goes, so Josie was Kid Rock's stage partner, the little person.
Josie, right.
Hendrix has been scheduled to climax Woodstock's final evening around midnight, but scheduling delays meant that he did not take the stage until 9 a.m. on Monday morning. I can't imagine anybody. All right. Let's get to a couple more tracks and then we'll get some facts out. All right. I got to say, when I said about Ride the Llama, this is the greatest title ever. This also might be my favorite song on the record. Don't tell me yours yet, because I'm going to ask you at the end. But I think this is my favorite moment on side one.
I met a man from Mars. He picked up all my guitars and played me traveling songs. And when we got on, he brought out something for the trip. He said it's old, but it's good.
Yeah, that great title for me, not the best song.
Okay. What about Pocahontas? I think Pocahontas has the best opening lyric on the record. Play the opening.
There's something so special about that. That's real rock star shit. When you could just have like two words and you're like, all right, I'm done. That's good.
It's a great song. And then it kicks in the drums, which are super like minimal, like still it adds to it. It makes it such a great song. Are there any cool facts? Let me see.
He had this cool thing. Like, I mean, even from the early stuff and then this stuff, and like Pocahontas is such a great example of it. He had this way of connecting you to the Western American experience, the Native American history, like the joys and the tragedy of all of it. Like, how does that guy capture this Canadian guy coming in? And like,
you know what I mean?
Like, he really tapped into that.
Okay, so maybe I'm completely wrong about what I'm about to say, but this is just me deducing it.
Yeah.
I know we've both been to the Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal, and you'll see a lot of like Indigenous people
that live there. So I think, I mean, where's he from? Yeah. He's from Toronto, but he grew up in Winnipeg. So he started touring Canada as a solo artist in the mid 60s. I mean, I can only assume that, you know, there might've been a lot more. There's a lot of reservations set up around Canada. Cause keep this in mind. Sure. And we know because we've, you know, it's what everybody says, Canada. And all my Canadian fans are going to get so pissed at what I'm about to say. Canada is Vancouver, Montreal, and Toronto. And then like Calgary and Winnipeg and Edmonton. And once you get out of those main cities, it's the middle of fucking nowhere.
Yeah,
and so there's a lot of beautiful fields. There's a lot of just, you know.
Kansas.
It's Kansas. It's Alaska. It's like that. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, maybe he saw it. I mean, that's what I assume.
He definitely exudes it. He definitely captured it in a really pretty profound way. It was kind of like, you know, it's just funny to have, and I mean, this is kind of the Canadian thing with comedians and stuff like that. They actually almost seem more American than some American artists. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And maybe it's a little bit of the outsider looking in kind of a thing, but he captures to me, even more than the grunge, I see why the grunge thing connection is there. But for my love of Neil Young, like it's more connecting like with the band, you know, like it's that kind of American, Americana folksy kind of artist. Then like, I see that connection, Dylan, the band, that's my Neil Young in a way.
Yeah. 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 I mean, some people just can see outside of their world and kind of maybe, you know, he's doing the research. I don't know. Some people are, some people are the Joe Rogans of music where they can just be, they can just, if the guy's saying the stuff and he takes it in and then it's his. And I mean, who knows?
Just if I could circle back just for a sec, when Please. We were talking about being like at different ages and like identifying with music at different times.
Yeah.
I've been going through that lately with Van Morrison. I've just Astral Weeks. I saw a guy performing Astral Weeks at Largo, and it's amazing how you could listen to music your entire life at one level. Mm-hmm. And now at this age, I'm actually hearing the words. Like Van Morrison has very mystical, trippy lyrics that I never really took in until this age. You know what I mean? Like I was listening to it, loved him, would put him as one of the top artists of all time. And how could that be? And I wasn't even cognizant of what he was saying in some of these words.
Because you got older. Because you got older and you finally started listening and you could process it a lot differently because of your life experience. It's dude, there's records that, I mean, that I always, OK Computer by Radiohead when I started listening to it before I started going through this like weird, you know, like existential crisis where I was like, do I want to be in college? Do I want to travel the world? And then listening to it during that time when I'm having that crisis, every song on the record felt like it was written for me. It was like I never had something speak to me. Every breakup I've ever been through, I put on Beck Sea Change. And it's like, oof, this record is about exactly what I'm going through.
Yeah.
And that's what's so great about art is when, you know, we might not get it. I mean, dude, it's like even a fucking Mel Brooks movie, Mel Brooks, History of the World. When I saw it at 7, 8 years old, I didn't get 90% of the jokes. The second I become, 17, 18 and I'm watching it again, I'm like, holy shit, this is dirty.
Yeah, right. And exactly. And you edit at 7 or 8. Did you like it, though? Like it was
loved
still fun.
Loved it. I loved
it. For a whole different reason.
The songs, and it was just funny, and there was fart jokes. But that's, that's what's amazing. So great about getting older is that you see things differently. You realize what's important, what's not important. You appreciate art way different. You appreciate cities, everything, friends. And so that someone like Van Morrison, it's written to be enjoyed by everybody, but it's not written for a 16-year-old.
No,
it's not. He's somebody that's lived. Dylan, it's rare that you get somebody at a young age that can write stuff the way someone like Neil Young and Bob Dylan and Van Morrison and Paul McCartney and all of these guys, have done. But it's like, it's just, dude, that's what I'm telling you, people.
when you get older, it fucking rules.
It does.
Yeah, your knees hurt. Yeah, your knees hurt, but it rules. Don't live on a fifth floor walk up.
You can't see shit. You can't see shit.
Can't see anything.
Your hips hurt just from sitting.
But there's always a throb. There's a throb in your body. You don't. It's, and it changes where it goes. So hopefully it just stays in one place.
You can't see when you're walking through the Comedy Store in the dark. You're not sure where the steps are.
Everybody has tripped backstage on the walk from the main room to the main room green
to the
room.
OR. Yeah.
Everybody has tripped.
I'm so glad to hear that, because I'm like, am I 100 years old?
No, they don't light it properly.
Why am I grabbing onto rails and strangers in the audience?
Dude, no, it's just they don't light the place properly. But that's why it's a good comedy club, because it's dark as hell.
You're right. Right. Danger Fields.
Right, we got to talk about some of the rest of this record. Sail Away's good. Let's get to the side two. Let's get to side two.
What about Powderfinger?
Best solo on the record, in my opinion. Play 334. Young recorded a solo acoustic version of Powderfinger in Malibu in 75 and intended it to be unreleased mid-70s record Chrome Dreams. He later sent the tape to his friend Ronnie Van Zandt as Skinnered, which is funny because that solo kind of sounds like something from a Skinner record, who were to use the song on their next record. However, Van Zandt died in a plane crash in October 77, and Lynyrd Skynyrd never recorded the song. But this is, and also, Adam, find out how old Neil Young was when he made this record, because this is kind of cool. Like, the lyrics are the posthumous narration of a young man who attempted to protect his family against an approaching gunboat. He realizes that all the older men are unavailable, leaving him to do the thinking. After initial indecision, he eventually takes action and is ultimately killed. The lines about fading away so young echo the line, "It's better to burn out than fade away." This is, I want to find out how old he is, because this is like he's telling this story. Yeah. Like you said about the Native Americans. What do you got, Adam?
He was 34 years old when he recorded.
Okay. All right. 34 is not young. It's not old at all, but it's not young. I mean, you know, in your 30s, maybe you have a 401k. Up. Yeah, you have a 401k. You got investments that hopefully you have investments.
You're thinking about taking vitamins.
Yeah. You might take a daily vitamin because your parents say, at least if you're not eating properly, take a daily vitamin. Okay, right. Just take it. Make sure you get your vitamins.
Fine.
But yeah, that's pretty mature. And then, I mean, the next song, unless you have something you want to add about this, do you have anything you want to say about Powderfinger? Because it sounds like you dig the shit out of it.
Yeah, no, I like it. It just, that kind of like the beginning of that really hits me. For some reason.
Why? What is, I don't remember. No. Is it the lyrics?
Look out, mama, there's a white boat coming up the river.
It's just great because it's kind of like Gordon Lightfoot, where you're like, you're into him because it's like, it's emotional and he's talking about love and he's talking about all this stuff. And then all of a sudden, I'm on a boat? Oh, wait, I'm on a railing? wait, what's happening? Where are we going? You know what I mean? Like, this kind of epic stories that start to come out.
It's a Jerry Bruckheimer film.
Yeah.
Bruckheimer.
You're like, again, probably the first five times you listen to it, you didn't even know it was about a boat.
Yeah.
You're just like, turn up the river.
No, I agree. I think it's great storytelling. I think it's a great song. I love the way it sounds. And then I really dig Welfare Mothers. Really, this is when people say that this is pre-grunge. Mm-hmm. Welfare Mothers, in my opinion, is the song on this record that perfect. And then even Sedan Deliver, it's another grunge song, almost punk rock. And then, I mean, we got to talk about the last song, unless you have something you want to mention about these two songs.
No, I don't.
Okay. So yeah. Hey, hey, my, play the intro, because this intro, we've already done it seven times.
Yeah. there's little Tommy with a guitar, like, I can do this. But that's the only point.
Did you nail it?
Bam, bam, bam. Yeah, it was like, oh, cow, this is how it happens.
So good. So good.
So good. And,
all right, so I got to ask this question.
Yes, sir.
What side of the record is better? Side one or side two? What do you enjoy more?
I want you to guess which one that I would say.
Fuck. All right. Right now, because it's 16.
Same. Side two. It hasn't changed.
All right. Side two.
Side one.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Fuck.
Yep. I like the lighter version. I like the soft. I'm going to make out with my girlfriend to this version.
Yeah. All right. No, I got it.
And then I put on side two and she's out of there.
I think this is, that's a little scary. It's just like side one keeps her there. Then you put on side two. It's like, you got to go.
Wait, come back.
You pick up the Nintendo, controller. You start playing it. You're like, hey, honey, I got my Atari thing. Yeah.
Your boys roll in. You just...
No, I, in my opinion, I'm a side two guy, mostly yeah. just because I really, really just was expecting that from the mm-hmm. beginning. And right. then when it kicked in, I was right. like, all right, this is great. But not taking anything away from side one, yeah. because I think that's what makes this album so cool, is yeah. that you're getting it, this could have been a double album. It could have been like right. a Love Box right. speaker below or whatever that it's just, it's yeah. great. It's different, and I was very, very happy after I was done with it that I got exactly what I expected, and I got something that I expected to be on an album previously. Mm-hmm. So it was nice. I think this is a great album. I think this is a great introduction. Mm-hmm. If you've never listened to Neil Young, this gets you both sides of him.
Yeah,
you know right. what I mean.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And for me, I know this is kind of gross to even say. But the first side, like that version of Neil, is he does that better than everybody else in the world. And the heavier part, there are people that do heavy better.
Sure. No, I get it. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
100%. Yeah, there's Black Sabbath, there's Deep Purple, there's Led Zeppelin, there's people that are those bands.
Yeah.
But that's what's cool about Neil Young now. And mm-hmm. I don't know, because I've never listened to anything else before that. I mean, is this the first time he's plugged in and went crunchy?
Right. Yeah, I think it is.
If it is,
yeah.
Then this is him being like, right. no, I want to do something different. Punk's coming out.
Right.
Let's put on the distortion, because that's what I feel right now. And
that's right.
I don't know what's going on. And yeah, it's an artist. He's yeah. changing with the times. All right. Here's some random facts and reviews about the record. So just because they just put out a new Rolling Stone list yeah. in 2020, this album actually jumped to number 296 on the 2020 Rolling Stone top 500 list. That's a 55 spot improvement, which is wow. big, because a lot of the albums we've done so far didn't make it to the 2020
wow.
list.
Wow.
Yeah, they didn't. All right, on the 2012 list, Neil Young appears five times, with Crazy Horse accompanying him twice. Besides today's, you'll see a Neil and Crazy Horse at 210. Oh, okay. All right, mm-hmm. what else do we got? We got Adam, did you get me some good facts? Because these are all crap. I'm kidding. All right, I got some stuff that's not even about the record. Neil was offered $1 million to headline Woodstock 94, but he turned it down for the fest, becoming too commercial, preferring to let the spirit of the original festival live on.
That is a thing that I've always admired, and you know from listening to music your whole life, that there's very few, there's only a couple that didn't put their music into a car ad. He was like one of the only ones that yeah. stayed. When we were young, the idea that one of your favorite bands even thought about going into marketing and advertising, it was selling out, and it was the worst thing. It was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
If you thought your band was selling out, which is now an aspiration, was a crime. And he was one of the only guys that stuck to it his whole career.
Good for him.
That's pretty admirable.
How much is he worth, though? Find out that, Adam. How much is Neil Young worth? Go to like Neil Young net worth. It's always accurate. It's always accurate.
It's always pretty close.
Says that I'm worth $10 million. It's always accurate. He's worth $200 million. Yeah, he doesn't need to sell shit, dude. He's made his money. It's like there's certain people that just are good with what they have. It's like I'll give you an example. Matt LeBlanc from Friends. Mm-hmm. And I know that's such a weird thing to suddenly go to, but I was getting ready to move to New York. I had to get rid of my Porsche, and because I got a Porsche Macan S in 2020 right before the world shut down. Wouldn't have gotten it if I knew there was an infectious disease that was about to stop all my touring and everything.
Son of a bitch.
But I had the car when I was getting ready to move. I was like, I got to sell it. I called the Porsche dealership and they were like, oh, here's this number. Call this guy. I called the guy. He's like, come by. Let me take a look at the car and we'll buy it off you. And I drive in and Matt LeBlanc is in a Ferrari leaving. And I go to the guy that I'm meeting. I'm like, was that Matt LeBlanc? He goes, yeah, he's the co-owner of this place. Whoa. And I was like, no shit. And I was like, and I started talking to him. I was like, why is he co-owner of this place? He's worth like $800 million. He goes, not only is he co-owner, he's here every day because he loves cars so much. Wow. And that's what I'm saying is that this guy could do anything that he wants to do.
Yeah.
But he's happy selling cars. And when I go to drop the car off 2 weeks later for them and I have to sign the paperwork, Matt LeBlanc is in the cut eating chicken wings, like literally, like hand him that paperwork. And I talk to him and it's just like, that's what I'm saying. Some people, they make their money and they're happy with what they make. And they don't need to sell out to, it's like, 200 million, your kids are fine.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's why I don't want to say it, but when Dylan.
Wait, say it.
Dylan was in his music was in a car ad. And then I was like, what's he doing? And then I went on his website and he's selling whiskey. I was just like, what? Is there a different Bob Dylan? Wait a minute. This can't be the same guy.
He's not the spokesman of it. He was just his music, or is he like
his song? No, his song was like in like some car ad. And then he has whiskey. He's just selling whiskey. I don't know.
I mean, that's kind of, listen.
I get it. It's fine. Yeah. But I want mythology. I want heroes.
Yeah,
I know it's a lot to ask, but
there you go. Is it better to burn out, or is it better to sell whiskey to people? You know,
exactly. And when you say that, it's like it's almost like it is two versions of the same guy.
Yep.
There's actually like four different versions.
This is a weird fact. This is the last one I got. Okay. For a short period in 1996, Neil shared a Toronto apartment with Rick James. Remembering the experience in an interview with Howard Stern, Neil said, "We did some wild things. It's all very hazy to me now. I'm glad I made it through that stage. It got a little dicey. There were some drugs going on." Oh, you think? You think there were some drugs? I remember singing one song for about a day and a half. God, if I could have a GoPro camera and go back in time and set it up in the corner of somebody's apartment to watch, just study. If I could Big Brother any apartment in the history of the world, maybe I would see the conversation between Lennon and Young, fucking Neil Young and Rick James, dude.
Super freak.
I'm trying to do Neil Young's voice.
Should we put out another line? You want a biggie thickie or a smally quickie? Because I know you got to get out of here.
God.
Let's go, Ricky. You're my best friend.
Now
I'm Tally from South Park.
I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing with that song, Super Freak. Yeah, all right. I'm digging the vibe. I'm so high right now.
God, I love that. All right, rapid questions, and then you're out of here, man. And this is Tom. This has been so much fun, dude. So thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Sincerely. My pleasure. All right, favorite song on the record?
I would say, I have to say, because of my guitar history, I'm going to say My Hey Hey.
Okay.
Pocahontas is close second, though.
Okay, cool. Least favorite song on the record?
Probably The Llama.
What?
Yeah, I love the title.
Title's great, dude.
Title's great. The song.
Title's great.
It's the most rock star fucking. It is. That's great. Like, that's Ride the Lightning, Metallica, dude. Gotta ride the llama. I love it. What song on this record would you fuck to?
Oh, Pocahontas.
Nice. Yeah, dude. You're the Native Americans. That's what turns you on.
Yeah, I'm not. I like my sex with a little misery. There quiet is, misery, dude. Though, not quiet choky misery. Misery.
Also, it's not a long song either. You know what I mean? Right. In and out, dude. In and out. All right, and then why should the younger generation listen to this record?
Oh, because it's got balls, because it's got energy, but it's also, it's meaningful. It's heavy. It's got depth. It has depth, and maybe depth is, seems to me, in my old man analysis, something we may be lacking.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, in my opinion, if you're a fan of Pearl Jam, if you're a fan of Alice in Chains, if you're a fan of any, you know, Black Rebel Motorcycle Club, any of the bands, Jesus and Mary Chain, I could go on and on and on. It's like, I almost feel like you have to listen to this to realize how you got to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's cool. I think that's why I love doing this podcast, is because now all that other shit that I grew up listening to in the 90s, it all makes sense. And I don't think you get to that without having someone like Neil Young plugging in and doing, and I love it. I love that. The reason I love this record is because I love that he bookended the record with the same song in two different ways, and they are equally as important as the other. It's like 100%. It shows you the two sides of Neil Young. It shows you where he was at in 79. And yeah, man, listen.
The greatest.
To it.
Very cool.
Thank you, Tom. Promote away. Anything you want to promote, please.
Just go to tompapa.com. That's where you find all my nonsense, my books, my tour. I'm out on tour right now. I'm going everywhere in the United States between now and March. So if you want to see me more than my wife, go to tompapa.com and that'll link you to everything.
This was great, buddy. Thank you, man.
You're the best. Thank you.
What did I tell you? What did I tell you? The one and only Tom Papa. Follow him on all social media at Tom Papa. Go to his website for all things Tom, tompapa.com, and listen to his radio show, What a Joke, on Sirius XM Channel 93, and his podcast, Breaking Bread with Tom Papa. Listener shout out this week. I want to give it up to my homeboy, ASAP Robbie. That's ASAP _ROBBBY. Hit him up, tell him why he's a general in the Fleece Army, and give your love. And if you guys keep commenting and doing shit like this on my post, you'll get the listener shout out, which means we're going to send you the $25 gift certificate to Red Lobster, and you get free tickets to a goddamn comedy jam if we do it in your area. All right, new music. Kirk Hicks, listener submitted. Fuck yeah, dude. This guy is a fan. You're listening to the song Gordy Lights by Kirk's Toronto-based band Gordon Lightroom, and you can find links to the music on our website, the500podcast.com. And if you are in a band just like Kirk and you want your music played on the 500 and put on the website, and we promote it and we help you and we try to build you as an artist, send your song to 500podcast@gmail.com. Put the album and artist that influenced you in the big line. Guess what? It's another Yardbirdie week coming up. The Yardbirds. And we're going into their 1966 self-titled record, which I think is also called Roger the Engineer. Look at the list. Do your homework. Google, Google. Stay, please.
By yourself. Don't glow. Don't know where. My basket cases. Look now. My laces are. Did you hear?
by the love I see today. Come back. What's that?
For the Fleece Nation on the 500, the 500.
Hey, you, do you have any plans this year? How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-D.com, SoundTalentMedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.
Next Chapter Podcasts.